Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station, available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Wednesday evening, September 1st, 2010. It is now 7:01 p.m. Central Daylight Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to our broadcast. We invite you to call 646-652-4620. That's 646-652-4620. You can send us email anytime to comments@libertytalkradio.com. I also encourage you to get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, Sutton, S-U-T-T-O-N, Sutton-Associates.net. In his bi-weekly newsletter, Andy discusses economic issues and how they affect you. You can also listen to Andy's commentary on ContraryInvestorsCafe.com. Lastly, I would like to remind our listeners to subscribe to our reminder service by listening to our website, visiting our website, rather, and clicking on our subscribe icon. I would also like to mention that we are now available via iTunes. This is something new. If you go to iTunes and type in Liberty Talk Radio, our archives will be there, so you can download via iTunes. We're very excited about that, and that's another venue from which you can listen to our broadcast. So go to iTunes. Now we're on iTunes. Soon the world. Well, folks, good evening. It seems that we get flooded with information regarding our financial status. And things get very complicated. Everyone seems to have theories, and the economists get on TV, and you think that they would know what the heck is going on, but they all guess. Isn't that strange that they all have to guess as to what has transpired, what has affected our economy the way it has, and what we do about it? Now, there's something actually wrong with that. It would seem to me that these experts being paid tons and tons of money, you know, phenomenal salaries, that are well-schooled in economics, who study the economy every day, would have a better grasp. And what's even more amazing is the amount of disagreement there is in that community in and of itself. You would think that they would be somewhat in concert as to what is wrong, what needs to be done. Now, what I'd like to do is I'd like to simplify things. There is a book called All I Needed to Know I Learned in Kindergarten, and I forgot the author's name. I just cannot remember it. But it's an interesting book, because when you think about it, everything you need to know is in kindergarten. I mean, things like fair play, you know, sharing, not cheating, showing up on time, doing your assignments, learning. I mean, basically, everything you need to know you learned in kindergarten, you didn't have to go anyplace after that. Now, it would be incumbent upon you to learn to read, to further your skills in mathematics, further your skills in penmanship, writing. Those are things that are responsible, that you're responsible for. And then as you get older and you progress, you should be picking up books on things that interest you, whether it be books on biology, whether it be books on computers, whether it be books on medicine or accounting, whatever it is. And then you can go to schools of higher learning to get a degree, a medical degree, whatever the case may be. But it seems that we take all of these years, these young formative years, and we absolutely waste them. And we give very, very little credence to what we learn in kindergarten. Now, what's really bad and sorrowful is the fact that our government takes what we learn in kindergarten and discredits it. Discredits everything we learn in kindergarten and says, don't listen. You know, here's really what you should do. In fact, you don't have to do anything. We will do it for you. All you have to do is give us the money and we'll take care of it. Now, I don't think you learned that in kindergarten. There's a big problem, folks. You know, I'd like to, there's a story, The Three Little Pigs. Now, you know the story, Three Little Pigs, right? Everybody knows The Three Little Pigs. Now, there are versions. It's a Grimes fairy tale. There's one version where the wolf actually eats the pigs. And I think the real version, the original version, the pigs actually run from one house to the other. But it goes something like this. There are three little pigs, and they decide to settle in this area. And two of them just likes to play. They go, hey, you know, too much trouble building a house, you know. We're going to play, knowing that there's a wolf in the area. And they say, yeah, you know, don't worry about it. And so the first one builds a straw house. The second one builds a house made of sticks, not very much stronger than the straw house. Now, the third one decides not to play, but every day, you know, builds a house made of bricks. A very strong house that's impenetrable. Now, of course, the two pigs that are playing are laughing at the pig that's building the house. Now, what does that remind you of? Now, I know even when I did this in school, you know, the kid who was the scholar, the kids that did everything they're supposed to do, we made fun of. I did. You know, we didn't learn well enough. You know, so they made fun of the person who was doing what they're supposed to do. Now, the kid who buckled down and did what he's supposed to do, he became the doctor, and the other guy became, you know, worked for the garbage company. And that's what happens. Right? But let's not go there. But we have the three little pigs. Then the wolf comes by, right? Wolf says, you know, I'll huff and puff and blow your house down. I don't think he even said those words, but that's the way we translate it. And blows the straw house down. That pig, the way the real story goes, you know, he escapes and hides in the shanty that the wooden shanty that the second pig built. Right? So the wolf goes to the second place and it starts blowing like crazy, right? And then he knocks that one down. All right, he got the second one down. And then he goes and then he finally, they run away, get away from the wolf, and they hide in the brick house. Of course, he can't blow the house down, the brick house. Everyone's safe now, right? And then, you know, he blows so hard, he gets exhausted, he leaves, and then everyone's happy. And then the two other pigs decide, hey, you know, they did the wrong thing. They build themselves brick houses. Well, there's a moral to that story. There's a moral to all these stories, but we don't listen to them anymore. Now, the way we would write that story today would be this way, right? After the wolf knocked down the first two houses, right? The other two were in the pig's house that built the brick house. The government would come in and then take the money from the third pig and say, now you gotta help build the houses of the first two pigs. Now, that's what we would learn. We actually learned that. It makes absolutely no sense. We have a caller here. Let me get him on the wire. Caller, you're on the wire, please. Your first name, and thank you for calling Liberty Talk Radio.
This is Joe from Montana.
Joe from Montana. Hey, my favorite guy. my favorite Joe from Montana. How are you today?
How are you doing?
Okay. You know, I'm getting old, but other than that.
I just missed the last part. You're saying that was this in the classroom you learned about the three little pigs and the government came by and said we now have to repair the houses of the other two little pigs?
No, I'm saying that if they taught that story today via the government version, you know, the pig that that built the brick house would be responsible for building the houses of the first two pigs, you know? Now, the way we told the story is that the wolf actually ate the first two pigs. But the actual grime story, they actually ran away and escaped and hid in the house of the brick house of the third little pig. Anyway, but that's it. What's on your mind today, Joe?
Well, I saw the title, The Three Little Pigs, and it was about economics. I said, hey, let me stop in here and learn about economics and how the three little pigs got involved. So that's why I'm here. Also, I'm supposed to have my show on at this exact time, the debut of my new show.
Oh, great.
But, of course, the guys that I gave the responsibility to, they don't know Eastern Standard Time from a ham sandwich. So
Tell me all about your show. Tell everyone about your show.
Yours, practically. Only it's going to be with a lot of cursing, plus I'm making the American people responsible for the stupidity that we're in.
Okay.
Since we easily could have avoided all of this if all we did was just, at the polls, never voted in a Democrat or voted in a Republican when they effed up.
Yeah.
But since we keep doing that, it's our fault.
Well, you know, my next stage in this program is that I was going to talk about the long-term trend of how we got that as individuals, excluding the government. I'm going to exclude the government, just talk about what we've done to ourselves and how we have divested ourselves, basically, of all wealth. And that was going to be my next rant, by the way. But I want to hear more about your program. Is it going to be on Blog Talk Radio or what, or streaming, or what is it going to be?
No, my show's on Blog Talk Radio, or it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
But it'll probably show up at 9 o'clock Eastern instead of 8 o'clock Eastern, because, again, the guys that are in charge of this, they're good guys, and they know what's happening, and they're anarchists, libertarians, but something with them in time is just amazing. So,
all right, what's the name of your program, Joe?
It's False Flag.
Four flags, F-O-U-R flags, right?
No, False Flag, like in how the government sets up operations.
Oh, False Flag. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
False Flag. Yeah,
right.
False Flags. I'm scared. Yeah.
False Flag Radio. Yeah.
All right, that's an interesting title. Okay. Well, you know, I know a lot of guys who've done a lot of work in the False Flag area, and they've put out some tremendous videos, you know, with all facts. I mean, none of this conspiracy, you know, wild stuff, of actually how the government creates these false flags and then sells all the garbage to the people, and then we just fall in line like sheep, and we just fall in line. And then if you ask anybody, well, the reason why we're bombing them is because, you know, they hate our freedom and all this stupid stuff. I said, you know, Americans can't be this stupid. I mean, we just can't be this stupid. But we are. We believe this stuff. And you know what bothers me is that the people who have educations, I mean, we're talking master's degrees, are dumb. I mean, they will not think, and they have this belief system that this is right, this is wrong, forget about it, you know, this person's good, Democrat, Republican, and that's that. And it about drives me nuts, Joe. Well, is it going to be on tonight?
He was a nuclear physicist. Yeah. You're right. If they have a higher level college education, if they're PhDs, it means they're pretty good in one particular category. But their brains, They don't transfer their brain power from nuclear physics to politics.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
You know, I coach a lot of people, a few people in presentation portfolio stuff. And when I get a client, you know, and I do this just for fun, by the way. You know, I mean, I can make some good money. I'm good at it. You know, this is one thing I'm really, really good at. But, you know, I sit down, and you know what the first thing? I hear a person speak. You know, and a presentation. And then they asked me, give me your evaluation. I said, okay. I said, you did a very nice job. And they usually have professional people and they're very good. You know, I said, they said, well, you have any suggestions? I said, yes, I do. I said, I'd like you to be honest. And they go crazy. They go, what do you mean? I'm dishonest? I said, no. I said, I must say you're a dishonest person. I said, next time when you give that speech, I'd like you to be honest. They said, what do you mean? I said, are you the person that was up there? They said, of course I am. I said, the person that I'm talking to right now is not the same person that was up on that stage. I said, I want you to think about that. And I said, now, I'm going to give you a challenge that's going to be nearly impossible for you to do. I said, before you can be honest, you know what you have to do? You have to know yourself. And you don't know yourself, ma'am or Mr. or Mrs.
Right.
You don't know yourself well enough. All you know is what you've learned, and you're regurgitating, and you're giving me that crap back on the stage, and I don't like it, as good as you are. And that gets them angry, but they start thinking about it. I said, until you know who you are, and that may take you 20 years to find out, you cannot get up on the stage and be effective. and it drives them absolutely. I'll tell you, you have to hear the conversations I have with them, and I'm not a psychiatrist. I don't believe in psychobabble, none of that crap. I said, now, I'm going to give you stage three, and here's stage three, and this one most likely you'll never do, is after you get to know yourself, I want you to shed every one of your belief systems. Now, don't go to religion. I'm not talking about religion. If you want to do that, that's fine. But your belief system's about everything. For example, if you're a female, you may say, well, women don't do that. I mean, whatever it is. I said, there are thousands of belief systems that you're harboring right now in your brain, and you bring that up there. And I said, I'm going to give that example to you. So I asked them to do something. You know what the first thing they do is I say, oh, no, I can't do that because, and then they give me their belief system. I said, I don't want to hear it. I said, first of all, start being honest. Now, you got to be honest. And I said, now, the toughest thing to do is to be honest with yourself. And you can't even do that yet. It is unbelievable. Joe, you should be there. You should tape the conversation. It is unbelievable. But the epiphany people go through, you know, people would think I say, well, it's good if you would speak up and articulate more and more gesticulation and be crap, forget about that. I don't care if you come up nude. I don't care if you're wearing jeans. I don't care if you're a dirty T-shirt. I don't care if you have a ding-dong cream on your face. I don't care what you have. I said, be honest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is really tough. But anyway, that's what I'm trying to do here. And we can't do that. Now, I say that only because when we speak to people with PhDs, they're not being honest. When we speak to people with the master's, they're not being honest. You know why? Because they're speaking from a master's or PhD perspective, you know. Someone called my wife for a job, right? And she's a doctor of audiology. Now, she calls up. Her name is Jean, right? And she goes, this is Dr. Jones. My wife says, yes, Dr. Jones, I'd like a job. My wife interviews and she says, fine. She says, and my wife says, you know, she's an audiologist. She doesn't know the other business. She says, what am I supposed to do? I said, it's easy. Ask her, what is she going to do for you? She says, well, I'm hiring her. I said, yeah, well, before you hire her, what is she going to do for you? Well, she's a doctor of audiology. I said, what is she going to do? You know? So I said, just ask that question. I said, if she doesn't know, throw her out. So Dr. Jones comes over, sits down in front of my wife. I said, oh, hello. My wife's the sweetest gal in the world. She's so sweet, it's disgusting. You know, everyone loves my wife. They all hate me, but they love my wife, you know? And she sits down. She says, Dr. Jones, I just have a question. I said, what would you do for me? What are you going to do for the practice? And she looks at me. She says, well, I don't know. She says, well, when you find out, come back. See, no one's being honest. But it's Dr. Jones who's there. Now, she would call, hi, this is Jean. I want to speak to you about, see what I can do for your practice. Maybe we can discuss that. If it's nothing, I understand that. Throw me out. I don't want to take up too much of your time. That's being honest. We can't be honest, Joe. People cannot be honest. I was told one time, 25 years ago, by a girl, Carol, I won't mention her last name. She's a wonderful, in fact, I saw her recently by accident somewhere, at a doctor's office of all places. Wonderful person. This girl, Carolyn, and I was in the hall. I used to work for a major, a fully integrated oil company. I had a nice job there. And she passed by. She said, do you mind if I tell you something? You know, I said, no, yeah, sure. She said, you know, I hear you speak at these meetings. And she said, you know what you do? I said, no. She says, you don't protect what you say.
Mm-hmm.
And it just stopped me dead in my tracks. I said, I don't. She says, no. I think what she was saying, and I'm guessing, that's what she liked about me. She wasn't complaining.
Well, yeah.
Believe me, she wasn't complaining. And I always thought, I said, thank you very much. I took that as a compliment. And I left, I said, I've never heard that before, protect what I say. But she was right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't protect what I say. You know why? Because
I
know who I am.
I'm going to ask you a rhetorical question, because I don't want the answer on the air.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking, you know what? How many jobs have you been fired from for actually talking the truth? I'm not asking you to tell people.
No.
But, you know, in today's society, especially if you're working for a boss, if you cannot tell that boss the truth because that boss thinks he's Caesar, and so you must have had a hard road to go at certain times.
Oh, I did horribly. Most last job I had was a good job and I got fired. I got my whole group together, my whole department together. And this company was going down the wrong road. I said, look, folks, let me be honest with you. I said, this is for you, you know, right after I got fired. I don't know what I didn't tell them anything bad, no secrets, but I just told them the truth instead of all the corporate psychobabble, and I just told them the truth. I got called in, and I got fired. I said, fine. Yeah, that's great. But see, today, that doesn't bother me, because if I was younger and felt the way I felt today, I would not work for a company. I would interview the company, say, you want to hire me? Fine. You better write out a check for $250,000 to attract me, number one, if you want me. And if not, I'm going to go to your competitor. I'm going to put you out of business. But that's the way I feel. And they have to know that. So they have to be careful. They're the ones that have to be honest with me. I can do whatever I want. Mm. You see what I mean? It's a matter of, and I wouldn't work for a large corporation where I was going to work for Mr. Jones and Department B-3. I wouldn't do that. Get out of here. I mean, what am I going to do? Fill out Form 1045 and, you know, go to meetings? Forget it. I'm not going to do that. I did that as the worst thing in the world. Hated it. You know, so I don't do that. And I wouldn't do that today. But people have to have confidence. They have to know who they are. And it takes a lot of work. But the most important thing you need to do is shed yourself of all of your belief systems, Joe. Everything, every belief system you have to shed. Because if you don't, you'll defend them. And once you defend them, you'll go down a dark road to nowhere.
Well, I happen to agree with you. I think all of us now, especially since when you become a libertarian and you do some research back into the history of the United States and why the school system is set up, it's purposely set up to create regurgitators.
Absolutely.
They really don't want thinkers. They want people who are smart enough to wade past the textbooks, get down the information which the teacher was giving them, regurgitate it back, and then, you know, you got a job.
Absolutely. You know, could you just think for a second, if we had a country that were real thinkers, if they were, Washington, D.C. would be smelling of rotting bodies. We'd hang every one of them. Every one of them, because we wouldn't stand for it in a minute. Let me just give you one solid example. I used to speak, you know, I used to get hired to speak to organizations and companies, and I had I still do, have a registered trademark when I spoke. Mm. And my wife gave me this, and it cost me a fortune to register trademark this thing. I had so much trouble with it, attorneys and everything. And my registered trademark was corporate exorcist. No, I'm serious. I got all the official government seals of approval and everything on that. And I used to really love to speak to corporations. And sometimes in some of the better and the higher level corporations, I would leave in fear of my life. I tell you, these guys hated me, you know, because I was telling the truth. And let me explain what I used to do. I used to study management, and I wasn't going to school. I would take books like on Peter Drucker. I read just about every one of his books. And then one day,
Peter Principle,
You know, he has that one book called Management. It's 907 pages long, small print, no pictures. I hate that, you know. And I'm reading that stupid thing, right? But on my own, I would stay home at night like people would watch TV. I would sit home and study as if I had a final exam the next day. And now I had read most of his books plus several other, you know, I've been doing this for 20 years, you know. And I stood there and I said to myself, you know, you jerk, you got to be the dumbest bastard in the world. I said, you've been doing this for years. And I said, you know, you are no closer to understanding the principles of management today than you were 20 years ago. And I was on page like 780 on this book. I never forget. And I that sounds stupid. I'm going to tell you the real truth. I was going to go to the bathroom. I took the book with me. And as I'm walking to, I know that's stupid, but I got to tell you, but that's the God's honest truth. As I'm walking in the hall, my little hall here, before the bathroom is dark, you know, I haven't turned the light on, a bolt of lightning hit me. Joe, I mean a bolt of lightning. It almost killed me. My heart couldn't take it. And I stood there, and I couldn't move. And I had an epiphany. That's one of my five epiphanies I had. And I stood there and went, my God, now I understand. I understand it all. I mean, it was like, you know, like something you see on TV where a guy gets total understanding of the world. I understand. I understand. I finally understood it. It was a bolt of lightning. And I'm going to give you what took me over 20 years of study to learn. There is no such thing as management. And that was the fallacy behind all of the studies I've been doing. Now you say, well, Joe, you got to be nuts. Of course it's management. No, you can manage data. You can manage inventory. You can manage bolts or machinery. But let me ask you, if you're married, how well do you manage your wife? You
well,
see,
that's the whole thing.
You see, the principle of management applies to things, not to people, and that's why no one's ever been successful. Once I learned that, I was a highly successful person, incredibly successful person in management, but I wasn't managing. I didn't manage anything. I mean, people say, boy, you're so lucky you didn't do anything. I said, yeah. I said, you know what? If I was in their shoes, I would be worse. I said, I'm so lucky I have them. The people would go nuts. They go, you're not doing it. I said, don't worry about it. I'll know whether or not. If I go bankrupt, I'll know they haven't been doing the job. And guess what? They're going to lose their job too. Everybody has a stake in this thing. And you know what? It works. I don't manage anybody. I manage nothing. And let me tell you something. If I tried to manage my wife, ba-boom. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And those are the epiphanies I went through. I went through like five epiphanies like that. And one was religious, I'll be honest with you. One was governmental. And but until you understand that and you study and you really put a lot of work into it and you get these, and you achieve this height of epiphany, if you will, you know, and you really are honest with yourself and you say, my God, I've been wrong for 48 years. I've been wrong.
Mm.
You can't get up and speak to anybody. Mm-hmm. Not possible.
Well, the fact that you're saying that you have to be honest, yeah, that's very scary, and I guess in anybody's world.
That's right.
I was just listening today, or reading actually, about an article about how, you know, how the government, how we're, you know, the world governments, Greece, Portugal, et cetera, and plus the United States, are in, you know, such debt. Well, back in the 1800s, the countries back then were in debt. So the point I'm getting to is that, you know, people are people. So if today you can't be honest, back then when you had Caesars and Caligulas, you couldn't be honest. You couldn't tell the emperor he had no clothes.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Right. And I just find that whole world fascinating. And believe me, I'm not a I never took a sociology course or philosophy course. Never. I have no interest in it whatsoever. I just learned through very, very, the school of hard knocks, as they say. And I learned through really trying to understand what the hell I was doing. And it's amazing. And then when I approach people and want to speak, and it's Joe, you really have to be there. And they say, tell me, if my first, you know, evaluation of how their speech went, I said, you did very well. You're very professional, beautiful speech. I said, there's one thing I want you to do next time. They went, I'd like you to be honest. And they go nuts. They go absolutely nuts. But you know what they also say? After a while, I say, and I tell them, I said, if you want me out, I'm out. They go, no, no, no. They go, you have no idea how much I appreciate what you're saying. They all say that. You have no idea how much I appreciate what you're saying to me. Because no one's ever told them. No one's ever been honest with them.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Well, I usually get appreciated after I'm gone. I've had bosses, I think four bosses call me up and say, you know, how would you like to come back? which is flattering. You know,
oh, absolutely. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
No boss has ever done that. They always said, I'm glad you're gone. You know, they were happy to see me. God, out of sight,
yeah,
out of mind.
Yeah, but you know what?
The
theme of what you're saying, that's the theme in All the King's Men with Sean Penn.
Oh, yeah.
And remember, you know, when he was going around trying to become he was running for office, and he was pointing to the charts, and he was boring people, and then he got honest, and then he said, you know what? You're Hicks, and I'm a Hick. We're all Hicks. Yada, yada, yada. And then he went on, and, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, for example, if I get up to speak somewhere, and I said, you know, I want people to know who I am. I said, let me tell you who I am. I said, I'm an atheist and an anarchist. And I look at the people. I said, how comfortable do you feel with that? And I said, you just shriveled in your tracks. I said, you feel far uncomfortable. I said, why do you feel uncomfortable with that? And I try to get them to answer that question. I said, now I got a secret for each one of you. Everybody, it could be 1,000 people. I said, every one of you anarchist. Every single one of you. I said, because every single one of you don't like to be told what to do. Anybody here who likes to be told what to do by somebody that they don't particularly like, raise your hand. Never does anyone raise their hand. I said, then you're an anarchist. Don't kid yourself. At least don't lie to yourself. Be honest. Don't say, but I'm a Democrat. Forget about that. You know, I ran for office one time, and I had a great time at a debate. Someday I'm going to give the speeches that I gave in the debate on the radio. It was really fantastic. It was a fun thing. It had nothing to do with politics, you know. And it was a comical scene. It was a comic scene, you know. And I got applause and everything. And at the end, this little lady came up to me. You know, she said, "You're wonderful." She says, "I agreed with everything you said. You're wonderful." I said, "Thank you." She says, "But unfortunately, I can't vote for you because I'm a Democrat."
Yeah.
You see, and that's what we're up against. So I said, "All right." It was your little old lady. I said, "Okay, thank you very much for the compliment. Goodbye." You know, what are you going to do? And that's the problem with our mentality. You tell people that, you know, we're having problems with our currency today. That's what I was going to talk about a little bit today. Our currency today, you know, they get angry because, you know, you're un-American, damn it. You know, get the hell out of the country if you don't like America.
Love it or leave it.
You know, love it or leave it type thing. Oh, no, we got a problem with that. They don't want to listen. And I don't talk to anybody about currency anymore. I don't talk because they get angry. I go, you know what? And then when they ask me, I said, "What are you asking me for? Why are you asking me?" "Well, I just want your opinion." I said, "You want to pay me for my opinion?" I said, "And tell me, what are you going to do with my opinion?" "Well, I just want to know." I said, "No, you're not going to get it. Because I know what you're going to do." You're saying, "Oh, he's crazy. He's crazy, man. He's a lunatic." You know, I don't want to go there. You know, but the fact is our currency is going to collapse, you know. It's going to collapse. You tell them our currency is going to collapse. "What does that mean?" You know, they don't even know what you mean. You know, I said, "But hey, wait a minute. You got a master's in economics. What do you mean you don't understand what that means?" You know, it's an amazing job. Now,
I know. It's frustrating. Look, people say they want your opinion. What they really mean is, "Could you please reaffirm my opinion?"
That's right. That's right. Or say something and then go home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just go. I'll let you say what you had to say, but let's please go home.
Yeah, please don't wake me up.
That's right. Now, Joe, when is your program tonight?
Yeah, my program is supposed to be on now. It's supposed to be
on. Yeah, right. 8 o'clock. So now it's going
to
be on
8 o'clock to 9 o'clock.
Okay.
But like I said, you know, the people that, you know, nice guys and knowledgeable, but something with them in time. So who knows? It might come on in a few minutes, at 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, or it might not. But if not, I'm going to have to curse. I mean, if it does, I'm going to curse them out. Then I'm going to get into the subject of how Americans are effing stupid and why they're effing stupid. And I might get into the hate crime thing about why words, even though they should never be used to try to insult people or hurt people, if they are used in a crime, should not be used to put 15, 10 years tacked on to somebody's sentence.
Yeah.
And things like this. So, and I'll be talking about the current news, and just trying to wake people up by letting them know that you are idiots. You're responsible for, to a large degree, about what's happening in America and what you're doing about it. And there's a simple solution. But, of course, you, as stupid Americans, will not accept that solution because it's too simple.
Right.
But what can I tell you? You idiot. And I'll go on like that.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Joe. I'm going to tell him two more, so I'm going to take you off the air for a minute, if you don't mind.
Okay.
And
all right,
I'll try to listen in, okay?
Me about your experiences, and maybe one day you play those debates and...
no, my drums.
And let people know.
Okay. All right, Joe. Thanks a lot for calling.
All right, Joe. I'll talk to you.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
He's terrific. He calls in all the time. There's a few people who call all the time. You know, the two, I only got about 10 minutes left. I gave a little talk today, and I'll give you a summary of the talk. And it was called, it had to do with an understanding, without understanding economics, why we are where we are today, you know. And let me explain this to you. All right, this is what I said. I said, you know, let's go down memory lane. When I was a young kid, you know, my father and I, every Sunday, one of the things we used to do is we used to go look for houses. We lived in New York City. I was living in Manhattan, and then I lived in East Harlem, and then I lived in the Bronx for a while. But on the weekends, you know, especially on Sunday, we would go look for houses, and we used to go to Whitestone, right over the bridge in New York. And they were building, that's where all the building was being done at the time. And they'd build these houses. Houses were like $17,000, a lot of money, you know. And the expensive house would be like $20,000 or $22,000. And, you know, we'd go look at houses. You know, of course, my father almost closed on every house we saw, and we saw every house that was being built. But I had a lot of fun with my father. God bless his soul. Anyway, a house then would cost $17,000, you know, but you had to put down $2,000 or $3,000, $4,000 down, and you had to go through some real scrutiny, you know, with the banker for 3 weeks of scrutiny before they give you a loan. I just want to tell you where we're coming from, okay? And that was in the 50s and the 60s. People also never borrowed money so they could pay off a debt. You know, unless you were in debt to the mafia or something like that, then you had a problem. You had to do that. People had things which no one heard of. You never hear of today. Christmas clubs. A Christmas club, you go into the bank, and they gave you a little book, and it had the Christmas things on it, you know, and you put away like $10, $20 a month, and then at the end of the year, you'd have $120, $240, or whatever the case may be, and that money was used for Christmas gifts. And, you know, when you run out of the money at the Christmas club, that was the end of your shopping. Very, very simple, right? And so we kept out of debt that way. Also, when we bought a car, was made to maybe $2,000. Expensive car was $3,000, but very rarely you get that high. And then you had to put a substantial amount down to get qualify for a loan. And the maximum term for an auto loan was 2 years. In other words, people had wealth back then. People had an interest in their house. They had equity in their house. They had equity in their car. They had equity in their Christmas clubs. And everyone saved. Everybody, my mother, she opened the savings account for me. I had to put money in every week, you know, or every month, whatever it was. I forgot. But everybody had a net worth. Everybody. I mean, you know, when I think about it, the poorest people back then were richer than the apparently rich people today. Because apparently rich people today, they're in debt well over what they owe, what they own. In other words, they have a negative net worth. At least the poor people back then, they had a minuscule net worth or a small net worth. So they were better off back then. Right? Now, what happened since then? And if you work for a company and they had a pension or a 401k plan or an IRA plan, whatever they had, you know, everyone contributed. Most people did it. If you didn't, you were nuts because it was free money. You got the stuff for nothing. You know, you put in so much and then the company would match it. And no one ever, let me tell you this again, no one ever took money out until they retired. You put money into your pension plan or your 401k plan or your IRA, whatever the case may be back then, whatever they called it back then. I mean, you never took the money. I never heard of it. No one ever took money out. It went in and you waited. If you starved, you starved, but then you waited till you were 65 until you get out or whatever the date was. Now, what happened? All right, we start watching TV. This is a lesson in economics. It's very simple. All right. Now, TV said, hey, attracting the masses, you know, we're addressing the masses. You know what we can do? We can advertise. And companies started to advertise on TV. And what they started to do, they started to advertise, encouraging us to buy things that we didn't actually need, but things that we thought we wanted. And we started this consumer boom, you know. And people start buying and buying, and then they started to decrease their own wealth because they were buying a lot of crap, as they do today. And people were drawing their savings down and everything to buy all the stuff they saw on TV because everyone was happy on TV, and they had to have it. They had to keep up with the Joneses. So then credit cards came out. I remember the first card I had was sent to my house when I lived in the Bronx. It was called a Unicard. You know, just came in the mail. I could use it. Wow. You know, it's like free money, you know, yay, you know. And we start using the credit card. Well, people start using the credit card, right? Now they're building up debt. They're not putting money away, all right? So they're going negative, right? Then what happened, right? People's credit card debt got out of hand. After it got out of hand, all you had to do is watch TV. Now, you went from advertising credit cards to buy. And by the way, most of the ads today on TV, you know, they're as long, I mean, a series of ads, are as long as the playtime of the movie that you're watching. And sometimes it's even longer. In other words, TV today is one big marketing tool. Just buy. Then they show you a couple of minutes of the story. Then buy. We're bombarded. And then on the weekends, what do? We go to the mall and go shopping. Right? Now, people overextend themselves on the credit card. I mean, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $70,000 on credit cards. No money in the bank. right? But they had a house. How about we refinance the house? They refinance the house, and guess what happens? You know, they refinance the house, they pay off the credit cards, right? And they're clean. No. Because they're still in the same habit. What they do is they go back spending the credit cards. Now, you just watch this. They say refinance. You know, countrywide financing and all that other stuff for the house, you know? And then they continue to promote the credit cards because that's where the real money is. You know, 21% if you go past due. If you revolve, it's at least 13% or whatever the case may be. So they're doing that, right? Then all of a sudden you start to see ads saying, you know, use your credit card to pay your mortgage. Now, after that burnt out and people now had no money in their house, they were underwater in their mortgage, they were spending too much money on their credit cards, they once again drew up the limits of their credit cards. Then you saw ads that talked about getting a second mortgage on your house. In other words, owing more on the loans on your mortgage than the house was worth. Right? After that, you saw credit counseling services come in and advertising saying, oh, don't worry, don't pay your credit cards, come to us. And if you owe $70,000, you know, all you have to do is pay $700, right? Then all of a sudden, you saw things like structured settlements. If you have a structured settlement, and this is now, understand, these are the same people, and the only wealth that they have is in a structured settlement. And a structured settlement is like an annuity, like an insurance policy, life insurance policy. If you have that, you know, why don't you get the money now? Because get the money when you need it, you know, and pay off your credit card, right? And you saw ads that went, it's my money and I need it now. A famous ad, right? And so people started to take whatever little wealth they had in structured settlements and they start depleting those. And they're getting only a small amount. And after they did that, now kind of as you see, reverse mortgages. Let us buy your house for you while you live in it. We'll own the house, you know, we'll make the payments, whatever the case may be. In other words, folks, what we have done, we did to ourselves. We took people who had We were people who had wealth. We had wealth. When I say wealth, we had net worth. We had equity in things that we bought. We saved money, and then we purchased things. We went from that to being a consumer economy. And this consumer economy is all crap because all we're buying, over 95% of what we buy, is stuff that we don't need. It's just things that we think that we want. And now we're left with a population, for the most part, that has no net worth. They have no equity, and they're in debt. The conclusion to this whole thing is that we can't get out of this financial malaise that we're in because we're not worth anything financially. There are very, very few people who are. So they're going to be people who survive this financial crash, and everybody else is going to suffer. And I can tell you now that there is absolutely no way that the average American is going to survive this, or that America can survive it, or that we can come back. Because the way we want to come back is we want the consumer to buy. The consumer has spent and can never spend the amount that it spent before, as it did before, in order to keep this big Ponzi scheme going. And it's been a big Ponzi scheme since the 1950s. And we have become the losers. Now, I recognized this a long time ago. 12 years ago, I recognized this. And I started to reverse things. And am I glad I did. Right? Take that to heart, okay? And I'll see you next week on Liberty Talk Radio. This is the end of our broadcast. Thank you for listening in. And we'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you are either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there is no middle ground. Folks, freedom is like riding a motorcycle, and folks, I love riding my motorcycle. You feel free, liberated, your life is in your own hands. But with that freedom comes responsibility and risk. The government is like training wheels. They control the ride in your every move. Juan Paul has a sign in his desk that says, don't steal. The government hates competition. With that, until next time, I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well. Stay tuned.